Nelson Deeble was a troubled young man. Not always in trouble, but he had trouble. His parents had divorced when he was young. And then in his teens, his mom had a tough time with him. I know a lot of you moms can maybe relate to that. So he got a chance to go to a school in New Jersey, the Petty School, it's called, and they seem to have some good things to do and help these young troubled teens. And they had programs that they could be involved in that helped them. And in fact, this particular school had a swim team. And the swim coach was introduced to Nelson's mother when they first interviewed. And his name was Chris Martin. And Chris was kind of a drill sergeant type, if you know what I mean. And his mom thought, you know, this might be just the kind of male influence my son needs. And in fact, Chris decided, you know, he would get involved. He joined the swim team, and lo and behold, he turned out to be a pretty good swimmer. In fact, his favorite stroke was the breaststroke, and he began to enter competitions in the school, and he won remarkably, and it helped. But he still was a tough egg, tough nut to crack. As many high school students do, he got a job one summer as a lifeguard. Makes sense. He was lifeguarding at a pool in a big gymnasium-type place. And on this one particular day, there was nobody there. It may have been the end of the season, but he was basically on duty with no one around, and he was bored. And he looked up into the balcony area, and he noticed that there was a spectator gallery about 20 feet above the pool deck. And if you're a mother or a father of a teenager, you know what was going through his mind. It would be really cool to jump from the balcony into the deep end of the pool. Trouble was, when he got there and he climbed up on the railing and he prepared to launch himself into the pool, his foot slipped. And Nelson Deeble landed on the pool deck, bracing himself with his hands, fortunately, before he tumbled into the pool, but he shattered both wrists. Surgery followed. He had pins put into his hands and his wrists, and the doctor said that it's likely that Nelson would never swim competitively again. 2 months would pass before the casts would come off. But as soon as those 8 weeks passed, Chris Martin had another plan. And he had Nelson back in the pool. This time, not swimming with his hands, but in the diving well of the school where the shallow end was 9 foot deep, he had him doing vertical leg strokes with a 30-pound weight strapped around his waist to keep himself up and to strengthen his legs. And Coach Martin worked him, and he worked him, and he worked him. And in the midst of a 45-minute, can you imagine treading water for 45 minutes with a 30-pound weight around your... About halfway through, Coach Martin walked over to one of the ladders, and he pulled it out of the pool. And he walked over to another, and he pulled out that one from the pool. And as he's going around the pool, pulling the ladders out, Chris is looking at him going, Chris, or Nelson's looking at him going, Chris, what are you doing? What are you doing? Coach Martin pulled all the ladders out of the pool, walked into his office, locked the door, and shut out the lights. He was completely in the dark, except for a small light coming through a window and a door. At least he could see the clock. But in that room and in that deep end of the pool, it was dark. And Nelson Deeble felt very alone. Life can feel like that, can it? We get thrown in the deep end of the pool, and we're going, what did I do? And in those moments, God can feel very distant. Weighed down by our struggles, our sin, our frustrations. We're tired, and if we're honest, we're kind of angry that God would do this to us if we believe there is a God. And even if we do, we wonder, where is he? See, even if you don't have any trouble believing that he's there, he's not coming through for us when we feel like we need him. Some of us in this room, some of you at home, that's where you are this morning. You feel like you are in the dark, in the deep end, and God doesn't seem to be around. See, it's one thing to believe that there's a God who holds together the universe, but can he hold my marriage together? Can he hold my life together? Can he catch me if I'm on the edge and I'm going over? See, when God feels like he's abandoned us, where do we turn? For many of us, the last 18 months have been one long, dark place. We're frustrated, whichever side of the political realm you find yourself, it feels dark. And it feels like nobody is listening. Where do you turn? King David knows what that feels like. You know how I know King David knows how that feels? King David was hunted by Saul as a young man. He was haunted by sin in his middle age. And then he was hated by his own children at the end of his life. He knew what it was like to go through dark places and dark times and deep water. So how is it that David, who had experienced the things that we're talking about, wrote Psalm 131? Turn with me there this morning, would you? If you have your Bible, if you're watching online, we're going old school this morning. We haven't, because of the emergency sort of nature of things, we don't have all the technical stuff. So if you have a Bible or your phone has a Bible, I'd invite you to pull it out. The wondrous thing is this beautiful little psalm is only 3 verses long. If it's not the shortest psalm in the Psalter, it is one of the shortest. And this psalm, I believe, and David's message in it to us this morning, reveals a way through the dark places. It reveals to us a way where we can find our way through the darkness that we might be feeling right now. And I want to encourage you this morning, if you're in that dark place, there is a way through it. There really is. I'm not just whistling in the dark, so to speak. There really is a way through it. This beautiful little song of praise, is just 3 short verses, shows us how. Psalm 131 is what they call a psalm of ascents. A song of ascents. You know that the book of Psalms in our English Bible was actually the Hebrew hymnal. It was what they sang in worship. And most of you that are here this morning remember what a hymnal was. You know, it was a book that you would open up and it would have songs in it. And we would sing them. Now they're on a screen, but be that as it may, it was what they sang in worship. And if the book of Psalms is a hymnal, Psalm 131 is a praise chorus. It's a brief little chorus that they would repeat. And a song of ascents was, these were songs that they would sing, the people would sing as they ascended up into the steep hill country from the valley to Jerusalem. And they would sing it as they marched and walked to make the passing of time easier and to keep the pace with the caravan as they traveled. It was a beautiful song of praise. It lifted their spirits on a long journey when they came to Jerusalem to offer their sacrifices and their worship in the temple. Now imagine for a moment a scene. It is a group of pilgrims, a group of sojourners on their way to Jerusalem. They've come down perhaps from the north, from Galilee, along the Jordan River in the valley, and they are down in the desert-like area that is there. And they begin the climb as they turn from Jericho and they start up the hill toward Jerusalem. And they are traveling along a path, a road they call it, but it's a rocky path and it's more desert-like than when you get to the cooler elevations above. But amidst the caravan, clogged with sojourners moving toward Jerusalem at festival time, there's a young mother. And she's, like many young moms, very petite. I'm thinking she's maybe 5'2" and maybe about 100 pounds. And she's walking along at the end of a day, and it is the end of a long day. She's tired. But she's trudging along, singing as they go. And in her arms is a child. Now, it's not a child that you might think. It's not an infant. This is a young child that is old enough to walk and probably had walked much of the journey to this point on his own. But at the end of this particular day, this lug was in her arms. His head is probably on her shoulder. He may be fast asleep, I don't know. But it is such a thing, and you've seen this at various places. She's hanging on to him and his legs are dangling down to here. In Psalm 131, David is telling us, I'm that child. That's me. Men and women, that's the way through the dark places. Listen to what David says in Psalm 31. O Lord, my heart is not lifted up. My eyes are not raised too high, too great, and too I do not occupy myself with things too great and too marvelous for me. But I have calmed and quieted my soul like a weaned child. Like a weaned child with its mother within me. O Israel, hope in the Lord from this time forth and forevermore. That's it. That's the psalm. David is reminding us that the way through the darkness, the dark places in our life, and there's no way away from the dark places, okay? Let's just say that first of all. And just because I get through this dark spot doesn't mean there isn't going to be another one somewhere down the road. But the way through the darkness is, first of all, he's telling us, by remembering that God understands the things I cannot. God understands the things I can't, so I need to trust his plan. My heart is not lifted up. I'm not proud. I'm not arrogant. My eyes are not raised too high. I'm not thinking of things that are beyond me, things that are too great and too marvelous. My ambitions are not those things. He's come to a place in his life where he understands that to get through the difficulties of life, we need a certain childlike perspective. And that's hard for us as adults. I didn't say we need a childish perspective, but we need a childlike perspective. In Matthew chapter 18, Jesus is speaking to the disciples, and they ask him a very interesting question. At that time, in verse 1, it says, at that time the disciples came to Jesus saying, "Who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" And calling to him a child, he put him in the midst, and he said, "Truly I say to you, unless you turn and become like children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven." You'll never get it if you don't understand our need to come to God the way children do. "Whoever humbles himself like this child is greatest in the kingdom of heaven." Life's mysteries, life's dilemmas, life's problems are going to be with us as long as sin exists in the world. You're never going to get through with them. They're always going to be something more. I don't say that to discourage you. I say that to encourage you. To not be surprised. Grappling with those requires a certain childlike willingness to trust. Dad knows. Mom knows what to do. They'll know what to do because, frankly, I don't. And that's what's hard for us as adults. We have grown, as we've grown up in our adulthood, however old you are, we've learned to self-protect in our pride, in our ego. We puff ourselves up when we don't let anybody see that we're vulnerable and that we're weak, that we have issues that we can't find that seem to have an answer. We need a humility that says, "I don't get it." We need even to be able to get mad at God sometimes and say, "What in the world are you doing in my life? I don't like it." You see, there's a certain humility that children have in that they're able to recognize that somebody else knows what they don't know. And they have an idea of what they're doing that we don't understand. You see, David had learned the hard way. He had gone through a life in which it was difficult life. It was not like all victory for him. I don't know where we get this idea that the Christian life is just nothing but victory. It's not. And people that tell you it is are either lying or they're in denial or they're deceived themselves. Because it can be very hard and very discouraging. Don't miss the irony of this. Who's saying this? David, the greatest king Israel ever had. He had led thousands into battle. He was the man. He was the man. And yet, he was not ashamed to admit he didn't have all the answer. He had learned that humility comes as we go through hard times. Humility is an essential part of coming out the other side, with the ability to trust the one who understands what I cannot. People, we have to come to that. We always ask the question, why? And that's okay. It's okay to ask that question. Just know that you may not get an answer right away. You may not get an answer that you even like. When God appears to be distant and uncaring, that's exactly what it is, an appearance. It is not reality. It is not reality. And I'm not saying we shouldn't try to understand the mysteries and the dilemmas and try to figure out what's going on if we can. It's just understanding that those mysteries are always going to be beyond what we've learned. There's always going to be something more that we don't understand in this world. We are not at the apex of knowledge, of human knowledge, okay? We've still got more to learn. And if COVID has taught us anything about, that's the truth. That there's things that we're still trying to figure out. Doesn't mean the scientists are lying to us. It just means they don't have all the answers yet. They're still trying to figure out how this thing works. There's always going to be more. But you know what? There is someone who does understand. He's that good, good father that we just sang about. He understands. And men and women, I want to let you in on a little secret. God really does know what he's doing. He really does. It's just that we don't understand it. God understands the things I cannot. So I got to trust his plan. It's just beyond our grasp. That's all. I love the story about a young man that asked God how long a billion years was. And God replied that a billion years to me is like a single second to you. And then the young man turned to God and he said, God, how much is $1 billion? And God replied that $1 billion to me is like a single penny to you. And so the young man got up his courage and he said to God, can I have one of your pennies? And God said, sure, just a second. God knows what he's doing. It's just that we don't understand what he's doing. And so we must trust his plan. Now, that doesn't take away the confusion of the moment. Because David goes on in verse 2 and he says, but I have calmed and quieted my soul. In spite of this living with mystery, in spite of this living with this incongruity of, I don't get it, I don't like it, where are you? He says, in spite of that, what he had learned was to calm and quiet his soul. Men and women, faith is a choice we make in spite of what we see. He says, I have quieted my soul. I have calmed my soul like a weaned child. What is it that a weaned child knows that an infant does not? You ever thought about that? I mean, he's very specific. This is a weaned child. This is not a baby at his mother's breast. This is a child that has gone through something that has affected him. Why would he use a weaned child as his illustration? I believe it's because, quite simply, a weaned child knows the trauma of separation from its mother. A weaned child has gone through, if you will, a deep, dark place where the thing that he thought was most indispensable in life has been removed from him. You know, I hear people all the time, they say, oh, God has blessed us. We are so blessed. He's given us so much, and he has, and that's a blessing. But they'll go on and they'll just say how much God has done for them, and they say, oh, I really love God. And in my heart, I've come to really say, do you really love God? Or do you just love God for what he can do for you? And there's a big difference. Because men and women, if we have a transactional relationship with God, when the thing he's been giving us is suddenly taken away, it can feel like we're abandoned. It can feel like he doesn't care. So the second thing we need to remember if we're going through these times is that not only does God understand the things that I cannot, so I've got to trust his plan, but God loves me more than I'll ever understand, so I need to trust his heart. You see, it's one thing to understand, oh, he's got a plan. Yeah, but is it a good plan? Is it a loving plan? Does he know me enough and love me enough that he's not going to abandon me? You know, Jesus never said, let's go to the middle of the lake and drown. He said, nah, let's go to the other side. That was before the storm came. Do we love God for who he is or what he can do for us? And I think American Christians have got to do some hard thinking about that, especially in the darkness. that we're in. Life's most important lessons, I am convinced, are not learned in victory. Life's most important lessons are learned in loss and failure and disappointment and defeat. It's because in those moments, we feel distant from God. We feel separated from God. We feel like somehow He's left us. And maybe it's something we've caused by our own thing, and we understand that. But didn't He promise to say, I will never leave you or forsake you? But that's where we grow. You see, it is in His hiddenness, men and women, that we learn faith. Hebrews 11:1, what does it say? Faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of what? Things not seen. Men and women, we experience God's presence when we trust Him. It's not that we experience God's presence, then we trust Him. Now, I want to say that. Let me make it clear. Faith is the priority. We experience God's presence in our life as we are trusting Him. So we make the choice to trust Him, and then what happens? That's when we begin to experience His presence and His sustaining care. If you're waiting to experience God's presence, oh, and then I'll trust Him, you're going to be waiting a long time. Because faith is always a priority in God's economy. Faith and trusting Him is always the thing He requires of us first. He doesn't require us to do anything. He requires us to trust Him. It's always the first priority. It's why faith is what leads to salvation, not works. One of the reasons. Faith is a priority. That which is apart from faith is what? Romans tells us, sin. Ooh. You mean He wants me to trust Him in everything I do, every act, every thought, every word? Yep. That which flows from faith leads us into His presence. That which flows from faith leads us through the darkness. So we not only trust His plan, but we trust His heart. Because He's a good, good Father. And when I believe that, when I trust that is what is going on in my life is a good thing, that it is for my good, I begin to move through the darkness that I'm in. Because the darkness will pass. But He can seem hidden. He can seem like He's far away. Dark times are an invitation to trust that He has our best interests, that He thoroughly loves us, and He loves us so deeply that He's willing to allow us to be in a place where we doubt that. But you say, you know what? How long does that go on for? Because sometimes darkness lasts a long time. Sometimes it lasts years. Sometimes it lasts a lifetime. That doesn't mean He's not there. And David concludes this little psalm with these words. He's pleading to the nation. Just as I'm pleading with you this morning, dear friends, here online. Oh Israel, oh my dear, dear church, my dear people, hope in the Lord. Trust His plan. Trust His heart. Hope in the Lord from this time forth and forevermore. He's not saying, He's saying, don't worry about what happened in the past. Don't worry about how you handled it in the past. That doesn't matter. Today, trust Him from now on. Don't trust Him today for things 5 years from now. Trust Him today. And then tomorrow, trust Him today. And then the next day, trust Him today. And you string enough todays together, and what do you have? Forevermore. Forevermore. You see, God understands the things I cannot understand, so trust his heart or his plan. And he loves me more than I'll ever understand, so trust his heart. But, you know, the third thing I need to remember is that God knows my limits. He knows what I can take. So trust him one day at a time. I hear people say all the time, you know, God I know will not give me, in fact, they've attributed it to me saying it, and it's, I don't know where they got it. But I know God won't give me anything I can't handle. You've heard that. You've probably said that. What a crock. What a crock. If somebody really believes that, I don't know what they're thinking. I don't know what they've experienced. But God gives me stuff every day that I can't handle. Why? Because that's not the point. He gives me stuff that he can handle when I trust him. That's the key. He won't give us things that he can't handle if we're willing to trust him. And what he's asking us to do is trust him today, just today. And then tomorrow he'll ask you again, will you trust me? Kind of like the manna in the wilderness, just one day at a time. One day at a time. This time. See, faith is present tense. Faith, it happens in the present tense. The darkness will pass. Trust him today. So 20 minutes now have passed since Chris Martin walked out of the gym. 20 minutes. Tread water for 20 minutes, let alone 45 with a 30-pound weight around your waist. Nelson Diebel was in that pool treading water for all that time. And he was more angry than he was scared. He was feeling sorry for himself. I'm not going to quit because they may find me at the bottom of this pool, but I'm not going to quit. He was probably mad at his coach. He was probably mad at anybody he could think of. But he hung in there, and he continued to kick with his legs. And then suddenly, Coach Martin walked back into the room, turned on the lights, walked around the pool, dropped the ladders in the pool. You see, because Nelson couldn't push down on the pool deck to lift himself out of the pool. He had to kind of wrap his arms around, and then he could lift himself up with his feet. And within 2 weeks, Nelson was swimming not only with his feet, but with his hands. And in less than 2 years, this same young man would win 2 gold medals in the 1992 Barcelona Olympics. In part because Chris Martin had a plan. Chris Martin had a plan. For you see, when he turned out the lights and left him alone in the pool, he didn't go off and check his phone. He didn't have those back then. But he went up into the spectator balcony that was dark, and he laid down on the floor, and like a hawk, he was watching Nelson tread water in the pool so that he would not drown in case he got into trouble. Even though Nelson Diebel felt like he was alone, and he was angry, he wasn't. Men and women, and neither are we. Because God has a plan. Chris Martin's plan was to strengthen his legs and to strengthen his will so that he could face the challenges ahead of him. Men and women, God's plan is to strengthen your faith and your will so that you will trust him in the dark times that will come. God had a plan. And that plan is to build our faith. Whatever God is doing in your life, it is to build your faith. It is to make you help you trust him more tomorrow than you did today. Dark times are the way God breaks through our self-sufficiency and our pride that says, I can handle this myself. No, you can't. That's what a grown-up thinks. What a child thinks is, Dad, help me. Papa, help me. And God asked David, will you trust me, my child? Will you trust me? And David did. That's why he wrote this psalm. The question for us this morning is, will we? Will we? Why don't you just bow your head for a minute? Wherever you are this morning, I don't know what darkness you've been going through or how deep it is, and maybe things are good right now, but I'm telling you, even if things are good, sooner or later, it's going to get dark. And the question is, will I trust him? Will I trust his plan? Will I trust his heart? Will I trust him for today? Not tomorrow, not the next day, just today. And maybe you're here this morning or you're online, you're looking in, you think, oh, what's going on in this little church here in Wenatchee? And maybe you're saying, you know, I'm in that dark place and I don't know this God that Mark is talking about. But I'm at the end of myself and I need something. I need somebody to turn to. And what I want to encourage you is that Christ is there in the dark of your life right now. He's waiting for you to turn to him and say, you know what? I know that I'm a mess. I know that my life isn't what I thought it would be. And I don't keep my own standards, let alone yours, God. But I need help. I need some way out of my dark place, out of my sin, out of the bad relationship I'm in. I need you, Lord, today. And the way to that is faith. The way is saying, Lord, I trust you today. Please forgive me for my sin. Come into my life and show me how you want me to live. Give me a new heart. Give me a new hope. I trust you today, Jesus, that your death on the cross paid for my sin so that I can know you and have a relationship with God. I want to live for you, God. I want to live in a place of relationship with you. Not for what you can give me, but for who you are. And I pray this morning, if you prayed that for the first time in your heart, you express those words to Christ, that he has come in, that he's not just some absent abstraction. He's with you right now. And he has forgiven you if you asked in faith. For that's the good news of Jesus, that as we trust him, he forgives us. And then, wonder of wonders, is he gives us new life. And if you made that statement, that commitment today, wherever you are, maybe you're out in the woods somewhere or you're at home, if you made that expression of faith to God, he is already at work in your life. And I want to pray for you right now. God, I know that you change lives. You've changed me. I know that you change us into people that we would never recognize at first. I pray, Father, for whoever may have made that commitment this morning, that you would confirm that in their heart today, and that they would share with somebody what they've done and what they've said and what they've prayed. I pray, Father, that they would look to you in the darkness that they're in. And I pray, Father, that you would give them your light and your life. In Jesus' name I pray.